want to embody. I got interested in planning, which is a real basis of city influence when being involved in Chico Velo Cycling Club. And I like to meet people. I've had a career in civic engagement at CAVE and bringing people together to find out what their interests are and how I, as an elected official, can help them realize the change they want to see.
Tell us a little bit about your history on the city council. When did you first serve? When were you mayor? When did you run again?
I was elected in 2004. At the council at that time had two vacancies in the progressive side. Colleen Jarvis had just passed away, and Dan Wintan had decided not to run. And I was asked by Dan if I would consider running. And probably 4 days before the papers were due, I went around, got signatures, and I started running. It was a great way to meet people, find out what issues were, and I was elected. In fact, I got the most votes on that very first election, and that was just amazing. I ran again in 2008 and was also reelected. This time, that felt like a more satisfying win, because the first time I ran, people were just taking, a chance on me. But the second time, it was a reaffirmation of this. They like the decisions that I'm making and the work that we're being doing. So I ran for re-election twice after that. So this is my fourth term. I was mayor for two terms. The council selects a mayor to serve for 2 years. And so I was mayor from 2008 to 10, and then from 10 to 12.
Does the council pick based on votes or just who they want?
It is based on what the council majority wants, yes. Mm-hmm. Some cities do it by who got the most votes in the last election. But the council may choose whoever they like to be for mayor.
And Chico has a city manager who's a paid full-time professional?
Yes. The city of Chico has what we call a weak mayor system, because we do have a full-time professional city manager who brings a depth of and breadth of experience with him. And the city council is considered a part-time job, but I feel like I'm on the clock all the time. There are some city council members that may not have to work, but most of city council members have a full-time job.
Mm-hmm. And what salary do you get?
My net take-home pay for council is something in the order of $590, and that includes a telephone allowance.
So just $595 a month.
Yes, you say just, but that helps. Yeah. $500.
Yeah, okay. As mayor and as city council, how closely do you work with the city manager? Do you have meetings together all the time, or you call him up and say, what do we do about this, or what's the relationship?
I just texted the city manager about 20 minutes ago on a question that I had. When I was mayor, I met with the city manager at least weekly, and then we would get together to plan the council meeting to make sure that the agenda, that I knew what was going to be on the agenda so I could manage the meeting, that we had it timed correctly so that we were able to meet in our allotted time. Yes, it's a very fluid relationship, calling city manager. I feel very good about giving us updates. He and other city managers I've worked with have a philosophy of don't get ahead of your council. He tries to make sure that we know what's going on, because he understands that we're getting asked by the community on issues.
Did you see any difference in what your constituents were interested in 2004 and when you last ran, in terms of what's on their minds?
Yes and no. I think everyone is concerned with quality of life. When I was first elected, Tom Lando, city manager, said, well, I said, could we meet so I could get some information? He said, you're smart, you'll figure it out. Tom was a very He provided information to us as well, but he understood we were bright people and we could figure things out. He said, keep in mind, people are interested in Bidwell Park, public safety, and good roads. So those issues are still on the forefront. Mm-hmm. However, in 2004, that was pre-recession. We did not have people homeless on the streets. It was 2004 was a different world, I would say.
That's interesting.
We were more concerned probably with the impact of college student life on the weekends than we are today. That is still a concern of ours because it does take a lot of resources for public safety. Mm. But there are many, many other things that have risen to the top. When I ran in 2012, the economy and jobs were a hot-button issue, and I would say the candidates that ran this last election were pressed on housing and homelessness.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the big issue since last November, how many? 20,000 new people? 19,000 new people from the burn.
Yes. The largest increase in both in terms of numbers of population and percentage of growth happened in Chico. And trying to figure out how we can accommodate them. They are Chico residents now, and they deserve to have the same quality of life mm-hmm. as people that lived here on November 7th. However, we're not getting any necessarily extra income from having those folks here. We would get a percentage of property taxes, but we haven't expanded our housing base. So they certainly are. There's more retail taxes. We have made some increases in our hotel taxes, but there again, after a 30-day stay, the taxes aren't collected any longer. But I would say that the toll our streets have taken, not just necessarily from the increase in residents, but the heavy trucks.
Oh, yes.
Auto accidents increased 30%. Hmm. Just trying and finding homes and soothing nerves and trying to navigate this is very difficult. It is the county's is the lead agency on a disaster of this magnitude, and in line after that was Paradise Town Council. I know Carl and I went to their first town council here in the city, in the city council chambers, Chico City Council chambers, and to lend support, but also to find out what was going on, trying to find that information because people were really wanting to know. During the right after the fire, I found that out by just going out to different locations I knew people were in, the animal shelters, mm-hmm. the Walmart, community meeting groups, the fairgrounds, just to try to find out. Things were changing so quickly. Mm-hmm. And they still are changing quickly. We're trying to see what we can do to provide more public safety, housing services. Yes, our council meetings have been lasting very long. Yeah, there's a lot of issues to take care of.
Scott Huber, you're newer than the city council than Carl and Ann. What made you decide to run?
Yeah, I definitely feel like the freshman councilor here. Then, of course, we have Aaron, who's a future councilor. So, what made me decide to run? Well, I would say it started November of 2016. When the flavor of the country took a precipitous turn, got me thinking about it. And then I decided to attend some council meetings. And I frankly was just really shocked by the way that the previous council manhandled the public. I would say that's what really inspired me to run.
You mean they were disrespectful?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of made fun of comments during the group audience participation part?
Yeah, and they definitely didn't do anything to encourage public input, and I think that's You know, I think that's one of our responsibilities, not to just allow public input, but to actually encourage public input, to ask people to participate in the process.
And when you were campaigning, I know it took a lot of time. Did you think, why am I doing this?
Well, actually, the campaigning, I would say, to me anyway, was much harder than the actual being on the council. And being on the council is hard. But campaigning was just, for me, just 24-hour a day, you know, working to get elected. And that maybe that was just me. But, so it was a challenging time. It was a challenging year.
Mm-hmm. And what surprised you now that you've been on the council for how long?
6 months.
6 months.
Well, I guess I'm not completely surprised, but I'm really happy that I'm surrounded by such caring people, two of them right here.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, I guess I was sort of prepared for the vitriol, but you know, sometimes the level that you get of it is shocking.
Is this groups like Chico First or Chico One or what are they?
I don't want to name any names. It just comes from individuals who, you know, and I was talking to Randall yesterday or the day before yesterday.
Another council member.
And he's the mayor. And Randall's a tough guy. He's pugnacious. He likes to fight. I'm not really a fighter. I'm kind of a sensitive, you know, I cry at rom-coms. And so it's been a little challenging for me to get used to that, but I am.
Well, so where does that vitriol come from? It's just people who speak up in your meetings or write nasty emails or letters to the editor, or who are the nasty ones?
Yeah, actually, in writing, they feel a lot more free. I mean, and if you've watched council meetings, you recognize that, you know, they feel pretty free to say anything they want at a council meeting. But when it's in email or on Facebook or something like that, I think people feel even freer. And I don't want to make it sound like the majority of the communication I get is like that. It's actually a small percentage.
Right.
I would say 95% of the feedback I get from people is really warm and supportive and that sort of thing. But the 5% just takes some getting used to.
Sting a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, Trump has really set the tone for that it's okay to call people names.
Exactly.
Call women particular nasty. That's his favorite word for women, I guess. So he's created a different political atmosphere. When you were campaigning, what did people want you to do? You said, Scott, I'm going to vote for you, but I want you to do this.
Well, I think that once you sort of stake out your positions on things, then people just expect you to honor what you've stated that you're going to do. And so that's pretty easy. You have to think about it before you do it. You have to make sure that you're saying the things that you really mean before you start out.
One of the things you were in favor of was medicinal marijuana would be available to people. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely in favor of medicinal, and I've been supportive of recreational cannabis as well.
And is mm-hmm. that moving forward, or where does it stand now in the city?
It is moving forward. It's in its own committee now. It's they have their own meetings. It's a public advisory committee, I think about around a dozen community members involved. And I think we absolutely did the right thing in tasking that to community members so that they can then bring back and, you know, show us what sort of standards they feel the community can support and deserves.
Well, there's models in Colorado and places like this, so it's not reinventing the wheel, right?
Right, yeah.
Washington.
Well, we have them right here in California.
Mm-hmm.
What's like Santa Cruz? I don't know if San Francisco.
I imagine Santa Cruz does, but right up here north of us,
Shasta Lake.
Oh. Mm-hmm. There's a number. I think there's you know, in the dozens of California cities that have legalized or that have created regulations around both recreational and medicinal marijuana.
Okay, let's go to Carl. You're a veteran of this business. What made you decide to run it first, and then why again?
Well, I guess in perspective, I'm 68, and I was elected to the council when I was 26 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And served two terms and a term as mayor and quarterbacked the campaign in 83 that got us our first real progressive council. We had some good councils before, but that with the Dave Gazzetti, Shelton Enix, Marty Worley council was, I think, really ushered in an era. I ran when I was like 24 for community college board. I've always been involved with that. Maybe it's coming from a family of 14 and being engaged in all that.
You had 14 siblings?
I have 13 siblings, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. What was your birth order?
I'm a middle child.
Mm.
These guys are a little over-modest, and I just want to point out, has served longer than anyone in the last 50 years, and was our first, in 50 years, our first two-term mayor. And this gentleman, Scott, is a former school board member, so he's not all that a neophyte. But after my two terms on the council, we were similarly defeated. We lost four full seats. If we had just won one of those seats, we would have maintained a majority. And it was a lesson that we can't be complacent. And that as we serve and as we shake things up, we're creating opposition, or we're in encouraging opposition. That campaign where the four of us was defeated was one of the ugliest things I've ever seen, where big money, local congressmen provided staff for the campaign. Polls were done and issues were created regardless of what the council said. We had just discovered water contamination, perchloroethylene and tetrachloroethylene, just discovered it. And we were, of course, blamed because the polls said that that's what the public was concerned about.
Mm.
So I had 30 years since then where I've been a community organizer. I've had a full-time career in affordable housing. But, you know, if you needed lawn signs out, if you needed door hangers hung, that's what we did. And, you know, I heard both of these folk talk about their individual reasons for running, but I think there's that other reason that we're in a community of activists that support us.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran on the shirt tails of Jane Dolan. You know, Jane put together an amazing organization in 76 when she ran and lost her first time for county supervisor. Bob Mulholland and others came in and organized. And so we had a base. And I remember when Ann first ran, we needed to narrow it to two people so we didn't waste our votes. And that's what we do. And it was Ann and Andy. That really is. The second time around after these many, many years, there was doubts by, well, whether or not I would do it again. Linda has not all...
Your wife.
She saw the toll it took on me.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, honestly, personally, right here, that I just survived cancer. It was a low-grade lymphoma, took just a little radiation, you know, it was all gone. But I think I was allowed a bucket list. And, you know, I've been very appreciative. I'm very appreciative and humbled by being a council member, but that my wife would also be willing to take that on. And it's been tough. You know, the suit against me for Move the Junkyard and now the recall. I'm sorry she has to go through that. You know, it's been really a shame.
Right. Well, who are those people that are so caring that they want to recall you because of your concerns about safety?
You know, it's hard for folks to believe it when I tell them this, that it's a raw political taking our, you know, that there are people manipulative enough and enough money invested in things that it is am very, very financially and egotistically important to them that they control things. We are the only really steady bastion of Democratic or liberal politics in the whole North Valley. We're surrounded by a sea of conservatives and Republicans, and they have tasted yet again 8 years of control where the entire area, and by they, I mean developers, I mean the Republican establishment, and it would be well worth them, their effort, to put in $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. They do it every election, to do another $30,000, $40,000 or $50,000 to get rid of two council members and to take back control of the council. It's a raw political grab.
Wow. But listeners aren't going to let it happen.
I like your listeners.
Yeah. When you campaigned this time, what did you hear from people, your constituents? What was on their mind?
I think I jumped in at the very last moment because I didn't see the numbers in the candidates that would win us all four seats. We ended up not winning all four seats, but I thought we could give them a run for the money. We sure did. And mm-hmm. that was our goal, was to, you know, get that fourth seat so that we would have a majority 2 years ago. It took us two more years, but at least by holding the seats that we had 2 years ago, we were able to build on that. So I think our constituents, the folks, wanted to see a difference. It was really what I was for, but it was also that I was, I didn't want uncontrolled development. I did want to protect the Green Line. So they saw that, and they saw the threats to there. And there really is that, Anne was trying to express it, that there is this sense of entitlement that, they know best, sort of a righteousness on, conservatives that, homelessness is akin to vandalism, which is a crime, therefore all homeless people are criminals.
Oh.
When the one example I give, right away, our first month on the council, there was fear among young people that were immigrants, that were undocumented, and they came to the council. There was the language of a sanctuary city, but it wasn't so much that. What they really wanted was an assurance that they weren't going to be hauled away in the middle of a classroom. Something that we could have easily have done. We could have scheduled a meeting with the chief of police. We could have at least talked about their fear.
Right.
And instead, it was, of course, we don't want to be a sanctuary city, so you guys just go away, uh-huh. don't come back. And, of course, they kept coming back, and it ended up months and months of, and that just sort of, the next issue was the same sort of thing. Rather than just going as far as you can and listening and having empathy, we instead had a council. So I guess getting around to your question, I think what people were interested in, there were some issues that I think I was unique on, the airport and jobs.
Getting the airport back?
Yeah. Mm. And I think we'll have some surprising announcements coming down the line, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Little teaser there.
But, that's great. It's a pain to have to drive to Sacramento already.
But, we shouldn't be all flying.
I know.
We should be banning airplanes.
Greta Thunberg.
You can't win.
I love Greta Thunberg. The 16-year-old Swedish climate. So she doesn't fly. I love her, but I'm not going to not fly. So, Aaron, let's meet you. You're not on the city council, but you're active as a local citizen. What's your background?
I was wondering why I was here. and Carl's right. Don't mistake Scott's kindness for weakness, because I've seen, even in his campaigning, he did some very tough things that went out of his way to show that he did some. A better man than me when it comes to hiking mountains and fishing and spending the night in the woods and surviving.
What does that have to do with being a city council person?
Well, makes me well-rounded.
Yeah, he wanted to get the experience of others, and I think in leadership it's really important to be able to not only have life experiences that are build on your values, but then also being able to get down and relate to other people's and have see that side of the world and what it's like, and try to come out with that with solutions. And yeah.
Who was on this trip? I mean, was it a special group of people?
No, no. He decided to spend what, a weekend in.
Yeah, he's talking about the weekend that I went homeless in town.
Oh, homeless.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes,
that
without
makes
a house.
Sense.
Yes.
Oh,
shelter.
Got it. Oh, yeah. Where did you sleep?
At the tourist shelter one night, and then in Lindo Channel the next night.
Did you have a sleeping bag or anything?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It was raining cats and dogs.
Oh,
Lord. That made it more interesting.
Oh, boy.
But this isn't about me. This is your chance to shine.
That was interesting, though. What do you do in terms of your activism in Chico?
Quite a bit. I'm all over the map. Usually I just see people that are working on issue-based campaigns, and I join them. I got really behind a lot of candidates back in 2015 or even earlier that were running. I'd talk to them, find out what they were about, and then support them. Never made a lot of money, but you know, I'd give them $50 or you know what I could, and then really do the work. So that's where I could help them, was knocking on the doors and helping with events and doing those sorts of things. And that's kind of how the work gets done, and really learning by, you know, Carl and the examples he set in this community by stopping, you know, just his community activists, stopping a huge development that would have been in Upper Park. Some of the different ideas around housing and bringing, you know, bike opportunities in town, and just all the different advocacy both him and Ann and other leaders that came before him have done, and seeing how, yeah, one group and one coalition can, that's how you do it. You go down there with a group and you look to, you know, you hopefully look to work with people and not be so vitriolic. I think you get a lot more bees with honey, right? So if you disagree with somebody, you know, you start to think of them as a character that maybe they're not. And our elected leaders get really misunderstood. That's why shows like these are great, because you can find, you know, the person behind the candidate or the person behind the elected official. And, you know, they might talk about policy, but, you know, Carl's a middle sibling, and, you know, Scott will tell you about his family, and Ann will tell you about hers, and they're really, when they get down to it, they're just human beings, and they care. They care a lot about issues that people are having, and I think you sit back on the sidelines and you watch, and then something happens to your city. Some ruling gets made about a parking garage going up right where the farmer's market goes, and you go, hey, I'm not going to stand for that. Iconic water towers being taken down, you know, you just get that call, and if you're passionate enough about that issue, I mean, sure, you can get some supporters, you can get some following, and then ultimately you got to find people to work with on your issue.
I wrote a book called Resist, Goals and Tactics for Changemakers, and doing the research for that book, I found the emphasis in current politics in the States is tell your story, tell your story, tell your story. So I guess that means put a human face on this principle that we're talking about. What does that mean to you?
Oh, you know, I guess on the campaign side, when I try to help people, it is. It's about authenticity. You want somebody that's authentic and consistent, very consistent with who they are as a person. I look for that in candidates.
That's true. Flip-flopping is a dirty word to call a candidate.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a lot harder. I'm not an elected official than it seems. Probably act different in front of this microphone right now than I do in person if we were sitting at a bar.
Hell yes.
So, yeah, I'm sure it's a hard craft to master, but I that comes with the job, I'm sure. You know, you have to be careful not to offend people. You have to be careful not, you know, especially if you're coming from a place that I respect you at, then you really need to be careful about how you protect individuals and your points of view need to be, you know, clearly in the message to make sure that, you know, all individuals are looked after. And you know, Scott's right, the last council, did some things that fired me up. There were times that I still thought, yeah, well, we can go in and we can work with these people. There's certain things that, you know, you hear that term that, well, this side and this side, I bet if you got them together, they would agree on something. So in our current political situation, you kind of throw that out the window a little bit. But I imagine a time where conservatives will go back to being conservationists. They once were, and they've gotten, like Carl said, manipulated and scrubbed into thinking environmentalists are the enemy, and people who were just like them 30 years ago, just trying to conserve and save bald eagles or recycle, are somehow...
Or save the planet.
Are somehow in danger of taking away some privileges they have or some type of equality that they feel they're owed more than others. And that stuff gets me fired up. But a lot of it comes to union activism and growing up in Peoria, Illinois, seeing some of the plight because of housing zonings, you know, seeing a highway run through an area, a low-income area, and further taking that area downhill, seeing strikes, huge factories striking, and understanding that with a coalition of people, wow, you can get a lot of work done. Mm. I certainly think unions have done that for people, and I think they get linked into the progressive type of movement as well.
Mm-hmm. We need to thank our sponsors. Ask Dr. Gale is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and my Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero, who's our supervisor, and by the way, Sue Hildebrand is going to run for supervisor, who's also on the has a show on KZFR. The Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture, producing community festivals and events, including Oktoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And Ask Dr. Gale is also made possible by ChicoCallCenter.com. Since 1999, ChicoCallCenter.com has been assisting businesses and nonprofits with all their call center needs, from marketing, fundraising, polling, surveys, customer service, and much, much more. ChicoCallCenter.com can provide vital information about your customers' needs and desires to help you plan, focus, and grow your organization. More information or for employment opportunities, visit ChicoCallCenter.com. So Ask Dr. Gale is on the second Thursday of each month. In July, Sandra's going to do the show while I'm taking my little Soren off for a trip, and she's going to do it on services for the handicapped, and we'll have people who are disadvantaged on the panel as well. And then in August, I'm trying to do a show on women in non-traditional careers, but I can't get anybody from police or fire who's female to get back to me. So we'll see. If not, I'll do it on people who are homeless. And why don't you tell us what the Chico City budget is, just so we have a sense of what the city's primary responsibilities are and how much money it has to fulfill those responsibilities.
Well, our general budget is just over $95 million. And then in addition, we have a capital expenditure budget, which is close to $40 million.
What does that mean?
That is money that is set aside for fixing roads and bridges, things that are built that take... So operating is the day-to-day expenses that are... And the business that the city of Chico is in is service. We provide services for public safety. We provide services for housing. We provide services for parks. So we are a service provider. We don't make widgets. We provide service.
Right.
And then, so that those are costs that are ongoing. Then there's capital expenditures that we need a project. We need to repair these sidewalks. We need to repave the Esplanade, the north part of the Esplanade that was in the news this week, that is going to be starting in 2020. Many of the capital
expenditure projects, we spend much more than the $40,000 a year because we apply for grants for federal and state money, gas tax money, and they ask for a city match on that. So we are able to leverage that money into bigger projects.
How much did the roundabout by the News and Review cost? A lot. I heard a lot of people talk about that one.
You know, I can't remember exactly how much that cost, but there again, it was a project that the city put in some money, and we're able to get a match from others for active transportation funds, because that makes it a much safer intersection for cyclists, the sidewalks on both sides with the curb cuts. Mm-hmm. It also improves it for pedestrians. It slows the traffic down through there. I would be interested in seeing a chart to show how many accidents prior to the roundabout and post-roundabout. So I'm sorry, I don't know the exact cost of that.
So what does the operating budget go to? Is it mostly police, fire, city, employees, park officials?
Yes. Our budget primarily pays for salaries. Mm. There are some supplies that might be needed, operating the fleet, the cars, the trucks, the fire engines, and whatnot. The majority of our budget goes to public safety, police and fire. I would say 70% to 75%. Mm. We have a lot of staff that are highly trained and provide a valuable service to our community.
When I talked to the police department, I found there's only 5 women police officers, and they're hiring 4 more who are just new cadets, newly graduating. So the question is, who decides what their budget is? Do they decide and ask, can we please have this budget? Or do you say, this is your budget?
Well, it's a collaborative process, I would say. We do go historically budgets, how much we need. We adjust according to community need. Carl is not in favor of having major budget revisions outside of the budget cycle, but however, we did, the police chief did come to us and ask if we could fund a street crimes unit so they could concentrate on felons that are out on parole and maybe and then they find that they're continuing their behavior that got them in jail in the first time place, so that they could go out and I guess just rearrest them, and that and get me off on a tangent that people are being arrested and it's almost like a revolving door. They go back to the life that they had known before. If we had a way that we could have choices, you know, you've been arrested, we can send you to jail, or we can give you
drug treatment.
Yes.
Job training.
Yes. But no, they're just out and about. And then the parole office isn't up in Chico as often as they should be to check on those folks. So street crimes, that is one thing that they are doing, are following up on people that have been released and making sure that, well, not making sure, but making contact with them and seeing if they can offer them some assistance. I say that because, and I don't want to sound Pollyannish, like I saw police interaction with somebody who was at Rignall Park. That is that little pocket park just north of Collier's. And they were sitting by the restrooms, and officer came up, and it wasn't, what are you doing? Get out of the way. It was, hey, how are you doing?
Oh, wow.
What can we do to help you? I'm here to help you. Let's talk about that. And that was refreshing for me to see. We need more interactions like that. If we could add more social workers. We do have one team that is working with Butte County social worker, and unfortunately they're only able to work
with
limited with the homeless and with the target team. Yeah, get names confused. And the target team's mission is to check on those individuals who are getting a lot of calls for the police department, and the police department is taking a lot of time. So these are people that just need more guidance and help figuring out what those next steps are. And there's as many different reasons that those folks need help as there are calls. But they're getting high calls, they're going to the same addresses, so really trying to solve things rather than just react to them.
It saves money, too. It's like putting kids in preschool.
Exactly.
It saves money. It's worth the cost of a preschool because mm-hmm. then they succeed in school.
Yes.
Hello.
And not just in policing costs, but hospital costs. It's very expensive to use emergency rooms. And yes, so if we can work on getting that cost. So we kind of got off track on the question you were asking about budgets. How does that come up?
Yeah.
So historically, how much those departments have used. When we went through the recession, it was the first time in the city's history that we ever laid people off.
Mm.
But it was really looking at what do we need. And in the last couple of years, we've been strategically rebuilding our city staff. Maybe not just replacing with what we had, but where are the greatest needs? For instance, in this last budget, we have one more code enforcement officer. So we have two code enforcement officers. So they are the folks that can go around and encourage property owners to take mm-hmm. care of their property. Mm-hmm. We added a person to our parks crew. I believe that was in the street trees division. We also added one more firefighter. We also added a public information officer. And a lot of people tell me, is that crucial? Shouldn't we have hired someone for the parks department or more training for the police officers? And in my opinion, I think it was a very good move. Prior to the campfire, we had no social media presence.
Mm-hmm.
We had a public information officer when I was first elected to council. And since 2004 and 2019, the way people communicate and get information is very, very different. So the public information officer will be able to tell our story and invite people in to hear what that story is, and communicating with people the way they're coming into the 21st century.
Mm. Speaking of 21st century, there's a municipalist movement with its kind of headquartered in Barcelona, where they think, you know, we can't change the state, we can't change the province, we can't change the national government easily, but we can really use the local area as an environmental, in the vanguard. We can have neighborhood assemblies, we can have deal with issues that are in Barcelona. It's like street vendor immigrants are a big issue. So my question is, what would you like to see the city do besides security?
I think the question should be what does the community want? And that would be my responsibility, is finding out what they want and how we can make that change. And that a prime example of that is the climate change initiative that we just enacted.
Yay.
It was a grassroots movement of the city of Chico in 2006 did say we want to be more sustainable, and we had a sustainability task force, but that was 13 years ago. It was time to revive that. So it was a group of community members at a grassroots level that came out, and they spoke to a lot of council members, and I said, I'll take it to the council. So that's one of the ways we can do it. I did that with the Diversity Action Plan. I saw that people were not feeling that they were part of the community. When you have power and privilege, you don't see that others don't. Not all of us do, but it's very easy to say everything is going along fine. I don't know. It's easy to go to a council meeting. It's easy for someone to hear.
Hop in my car and drive someplace that I want to go.
Yes. But if you don't have that privilege, or if you don't have that family experience or know how to do it, it's a completely different viewpoint. So I was working with some community folks, and I actually heard the CEO at INLO talk about how they were hiring physicians, and they had recruited a East Indian physician. He and his wife came to the hospital. They were having a wonderful interview. They said, we want to go have lunch and talk about this a little bit. They walked downtown Chico and heard some racial slurs.
Uh-oh.
Went right back to the hospital and said,
no
thank you. We will never come to Chico.
Oh.
And that struck me as, we need to do something. So with that Diversity Action Task Force, we created a plan. However, when a new council came into office, other priorities came up. So how you make change, I waited till I could see that that was going to be supported by other council members, and it could. We had to relook at it and find simple things that we could do, knowing that we're budgetly constrained, but at least having some goals for a year and succeeding on that. And I think the city needs to be a leader. We can't enforce how the school district is going to operate or how that business is going to operate, but we can be an example and show that to them. For me, the Diversity Action Plan was part of that sustainability, equality, or equity piece. You know, it's really easy to see the economy or in the environment, but what is that equity? And so the Diversity Action Plan was a way for us to measure our progress. And it could be simple things like posting signs in Spanish and Hmong so that people have that access to government, that we create environments that people feel comfortable coming to the city council meetings and speaking. I remember the first time I ever spoke at a council meeting, I was shaken. And I think it was Mary.
Five, then.
Yeah, I know. When I was, it was Mary Andrews, and she was quite comfortably talking, and she said something that kind of cut me off. And, you know, I don't think she really thought of that, but that stuck in my mind of how we make people feel comfortable, how we notice people, and make them, give them the
respect.
Equity, the respect.
R-E-S-P-C-T.
Exactly. The city manager, and this is several years ago, would always go to the Chico Chamber of Commerce. I said, you need to go to the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I'm going there once a month. So, you know, just making sure that this is a community for everyone. I said earlier that now this is a community of people that used to live in Paradise. They did live in Paradise, but they live in Chico now, and we need to do what we can to find out what everybody needs.
Scott, we can do community gardens. We can do neighborhood assemblies. What else can you think of that is progressive that city government can encourage that's other than safety and roads?
Yeah, so I like your use of the term municipalist. You know, I like to say where the feds are letting us down and where the state's letting us down, we need to take matters into our own hands. I mean, why wait? So things like a cold weather shelter. Nobody else is doing that. Let's take it on ourselves. Low barrier shelter. Same thing.
And low barrier means you could have a dog or...
Low barrier typically means a wet shelter, meaning you can come in under the influence of alcohol or drugs.
Oh.
But low barrier can include things like bringing in a pet and that sort of thing as well. And of course, that's something that that's been a item of contention for the last number of months here with the low barrier shelter that was proposed for Orange Street.
And is that dead in the water at this point?
Well, after all the key partners were pressured to back out of it, yeah, which I really think is a shame.
Who did the pressuring?
Oh, who didn't do the pressuring?
I know the president of Chico State did it, but who else?
Well, I think that a number of key people in the community said, you know, you can't be behind a low barrier shelter in this location. It's bad for real estate values. It's bad for the rental market.
Backyard.
It's bad for business. Yeah, exactly. Not in my backyard.
Schools.
Mm-hmm. So But you know, Carl, I don't know if you were on the council at the time, but I always think back to the no nuke zone. Were you on the council then?
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
It worked.
So there is the prototype for the city setting an example for the rest of the country, making Chico a nuclear-free zone. And I've kept that with me all along as sort of a model of... People tell us all the time, at least I hear all the time, oh, you're stepping way outside of your bounds for what a city ought to do.
Mm. That's the old city. Now we're...
You know, trickle down, things that start at the top never make it to the bottom. Mm-hmm. But things that start at the bottom can eventually make it to the top.
And that is so true.
Yeah.
So what else would you like to see that the city do that's that would trickle up?
Well, you know, both housing and homelessness, which Ann identified earlier as being two of the major topics, are things that I would like to see the city take a larger role in. Carl and I just had a meeting today with the city manager about this affordable housing conference. So here's another issue where I'm being told, you know, don't get in. This is it should be a free market. Everything that has to do with housing should be free market. The market will decide what rate rentals should be at, what price we should put on homes, what size those homes should be. Well, obviously the free market has not been working for a lot of people. So I think that we need to direct how those changes take place. I think we need to intervene and assure that our very low income and our low income people can afford to rent, and that our moderate income people can afford to buy. Because if you don't have first time buyers, you never get second time buyers or third time buyers or fourth time buyers. Mm. If people can't afford to live here, if local people can't afford to live here, you've got a community that's going to atrophy eventually. So an investment in making sure that housing is affordable, and that's a steep challenge. That's not an easy thing to do. We've really got to investigate it thoroughly, educate ourselves, and then, you know, pick the practices that are going to get us to some affordability. I proposed in the last couple of days, I put a little informal survey out to people about if there was a one-bedroom, one-bath, 500-square-foot home available for you to purchase for $150,000, how many people would be interested? And I was amazed at the immediate response by people saying, young professionals, young working people, saying, I would do that. I'd be very interested in that. Some naysayers said, wow, $150,000. I mean, that's $300 a square foot. But that's the reality that we live in. And unless you find some other models, there's a land trust model that we could look at where the land doesn't go with the house, so you're just buying the house. Mm. Maybe the city or some other entity owns the land underneath it. That could lower prices. What we need to do, though, is we need to take charge of investigating those things. If we continue to be the dog and let the tail wag us, and the tail being, in no offense, because I think there's a lot of great developers in our area. They do a lot for the community. They have the community at heart. But they have taken the opportunity to direct how this community grows. And it should be the community directing how the community grows.
Right on. Let me go to Carl and see what creative, progressive ideas pop up for you and what else the city could do besides security and roads.
So let me give you a difference. Maybe I was in Barcelona a year and a half ago, and Phil, that was great, my only European trip. Saw a lot of other cities there, too. A week before the secessionist vote, And so I'm reminded that some of those leaders are in jail and some are in exile.
France, yeah.
And then I'm also thinking, well, what if Barcelona suddenly was next to an earthquake or a major disaster and suddenly had 25% more people in the city? Would they be still have the same priorities that you are talking about today? There are many things that I would like to have accomplished, or, you know, I guess I'm seeing towards the end here, but still to accomplish. And fortunately, housing has actually been an opportunity now as we're a bit more interested in it. So there is opportunity there. Mm-hmm. But much of what I was interested has to now take a backseat. You know, public safety is much more important now than it was 9 months ago. Just basic necessities are more important. It is one of the greatest insults that I've ever had was 2 weeks ago when the ER said that we turned our back on paradise. What a crap, you know, or a crock, excuse me, wrong word. Having said that, you know, when you mentioned that we enacted a nuclear free zone. Well, that came up not from the council. It was a grassroots movement, and suddenly it was in front of us, so we did embrace it. And the next day, Johnny Carson says, hear about Chico, California, drop a bomb and go to jail. And we were national news. It's sort of the same thing with the most recent, that we should celebrate the climate change action plan. But almost everything that was in that climate action emergency and what people were expecting of us was already being done in sustainability task force. So it's, I'm sorry, I'm going to offend some people. There's some bit of a feel-good part of that, that we did this thing.
That's fine.
But, well, feeling good is fine. There is consequences. Mm. It has fed into this impression that the that, you know, we're more interested in cannabis than paradise. We're more interested in electric vehicles than paradise. We're more, you know, and I guess I'd leave with this thought, because things have changed. 2 years ago, the poll was done by the same pollster. She asked a sort of a ground, I don't know what you call that, but a question that wasn't part of the main poll, but it was just sort of a gauging things. Is our city on the right track or not? 2 years ago, 57% said we were on track. Do you know what the percentage is today? 20%. Mm. What that tells me, I don't think that my policies over the last 6 months has had that kind of change. What it means is that people are more fearful. People that are from paradise are certainly more fearful. But even folks that live here, they're worried about their rent. They're worried about their job. They're worried about the economy. We have a very fluid, chaotic situation that people are taking advantage of. And it really has required us that we take a harder look at how to deal with the perception. And I hate that when we're being criticized for a perception rather than what we actually do. Mm. But it's the reality that if we don't deal with the fact, fear-mongers will take advantage.
And you wanted to comment on that.
Well, just on that, if someone hears something four times, it becomes the truth.
That's scary.
Yes, it does. So when you were asking what kind of things could we do need to find things that can lift our souls up to be a better community and coming together. We are going to be allocating additional money to the arts, and the arts are a very healing process. Maybe it's not just painting or sculptures, but things and rural community involvement, and to show what neighborhood pride is. We have a lot neighborhood strength. Is something that's really distinctive
about
Chico.
Do we have neighborhood assemblies in Chico?
We have neighborhood associations. We have the Canaan neighborhood north of us, Chico High, the Barber neighborhood, Chapman neighborhood,
and probably
Esplanade, yes. So there are neighbors, you know, where do you live? I live in the avenues, I live in the streets, you know that. And another thought would be a youth council. Young people have great ideas. How do we get them engaged so that they can
learn processes, so that the learning curve isn't as steep, and we can hear what their ideas are. They're our future, and things change so quickly that if we can get them prepared to go forward. But it is really what the community wants and how we can help facilitate that. It is things night and day from 7 months ago of what our priorities are. One thing I really want to make sure that we do before I'm off council is have a flagpole on the city campus that we can use as a community flagpole. And so different organizations can sign up